Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Won't get a bounce, Dennis, three in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everyone, and thank you again for joining us. We are the Unused Substitutes Show, your green and gold gospel, your only source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network, presented in part by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Tonight, I am joined by somebody on the phone because... house and life things happen. Matthew Cox, sir, how are you doing this evening?
I now demand to be referred to as seen on Bay News 9, Matthew Cox, thank you.
As seen on Bay News 9, okay, all right.
It's in my contract writer. Yes, oh. Yeah, I'm currently calling in because I came home, I guess it was yesterday, maybe day before. I don't even know at this point. No, it was Monday, and no internet. I don't know whether it's the lawn guys because that happens. I don't know if that's because of the weather because there was one or two dead pieces of equipment, kind of important to my network setup that just didn't function no matter what power outlet you plug them into. So I currently have my phone connected to a spare computer monitor so I can pretend like this looks somewhat normal, but without turning my camera on because my battery's already down like 10% since I started this 10 minutes ago, and I want to try and make it through as much as I can. Let's just say everything is pretty much the way it generally always is for us.
Well, at least this is not directly our fault.
This is true.
That's the good news.
There's also a hive of bees involved somewhere, but I'm not going to get into all that.
Daniel is not going to be joining us tonight. Stuff at home is certainly more important on his end right now. If you've been following him on Twitter at all, you probably know what's up. If you don't, scroll through his feed. It'll let you know what's going on there. We definitely... have him and Casey and the doggies all in our thoughts.
Yeah, 100%. We've always said from day one that this is fun, but family's more important than any of this, and doggies are definitely family, so wishing them the best.
That being said, if you want to tweet at us, react to us on the show live here, or even just during midweek, at Unused Subs Pod is the number one way to get a hold of us. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. If you want to tweet at me directly, at @_S_Cundiff. If you want to tweet at Matt, of course, it is at @unsub_Matt. Tonight, our executive Patreon producer, longtime friend of the show, Ryan Blank. Thank you, sir. As always, that is the best way to support us, and we've always appreciated Ryan's continued support of our show and what we do.
Definitely.
Well, as unfortunate as the circumstances behind everybody's lives going after Saturday, on Saturday, the Tampa Bay Rowdies legitimately thrashed an opponent. They didn't just thrash an opponent. For the Tampa Bay Rowdies, it was downright near historical.
Mm-hmm. I believe the scientific phrase is a curb stomp.
Yeah.
Yes. I believe that's how that's described. I think that is by scoring a metric F-ton of goals. That's the self-censored scientific phrase as well.
So the Tampa Bay Rowdies played a team that was, I mean, let's face it, it's been at the bottom of the table. But a team that, up until that point, as we mentioned on the pregame show, had, of their 21 games or whatever it was like 14 of them had been one-goal affairs, right? So this is a team that, despite its losing record, had stayed in the vast majority of its matches. They weren't necessarily getting destroyed week in and week out. The Tampa Bay Rowdies proceeded to drop a six bomb on them.
A six burger.
And, you know, it's interesting because, for one thing, I mean, look, Dan was hoping for a big victory. I know on the pregame show he said 3-0. I know I was more, I mean, it's me. I'm usually much more conservative about predictions anyways.
Right.
Matt, your prediction was,
I believe I said
2-0. Yeah, I don't think anybody
went with they're not going to score.
I don't think
totally right there, I should point out.
I don't think anybody in their right mind would ever predict a score like that.
No.
You don't go into games expecting something like that.
No, like on paper, that's the kind of prediction you would make, but how Red Bull has played and how Red Bull has played us over the years, I mean, I think we've had, trying to think, I remember seeing Adam Martin posted some stats. You know, there was the, what was it, the 7-4 home finale in the first season against Crystal Palace Baltimore, a team that got beat so bad they never played again. Then I believe there was a big, what was it, a 6-0 win. That was it at San Antonio or 6-1 or something like that? But
Let me help you out. I'm going to do a Jeremy from Sports Talk moment here. The 7-4 match was away at San Antonio. I remember that distinctly because I was there.
Okay. It was like a 7.
So there's
that,
a...
The end of that first season, though, that was like 7-2 or something, wasn't
six
it?
6-3, I believe, was that score.
6-3.
And that was Crystal Palace Baltimore, as you mentioned.
That's like a 1990s Buccaneers score.
Yeah, right. The other high intensity scoring match from Tampa Bay Rowdies history would have be the, I believe it was the 6-1 against Philadelphia Union 2, or Bethlehem Steel, whichever they were referring to themselves at that point. I believe that
I
was
we just call them Bethlehem Steel because that's a better sounding name anyway.
Yeah, I mean it's true. But yeah, Bethlehem Steel. That was a 6-1 match, and I don't know. I think those are the only three games we've scored six or more.
Right.
Pretty sure. Pretty sure. I mean,
definitely.
What makes this so much fun is that this. I mean, granted, six goals in soccer is just not something you ever see. But Adam was pointing out that, like, I think that's like maybe the second. I mean, there may be only two or three games in outdoor all time Rowdies history that had six goal differential margins. You know,
right.
It was funny because he threw out a tweet about the fact that it's like, this is like the most ever. And like on the image that he tweeted, there's a 7-0 score line there against like Baltimore Blast or something. And I'm like, I'm a little confused by this tweet, but it's still, I mean, it's still significantly historical. And I think that's the amazing part about what happened this past weekend is that it was just like, you know, how we've been begging for this. We've been absolutely begging the Rowdies to put on a performance like this, play a bad team and just destroy them.
Right.
And
you know, we've played some lower, I don't want to say lower, but like lower, less talented teams this season. And we've come out of there with like a 2-0 or a 3-0 or a 3-1 or what have you. But to go into a game like this, like, I don't think 6-0 is representative of New York. Like, I think they're better than that. Like, they're bad. They have not been a good team this year, but they, like we said, the games have been fairly close. And there's a little bit of a history between the two sides, even with all the turnover a MLS B team has, especially the history is carried over mostly by the coaching staff. A team like that's a surprising little margin of victory there. I'm not gonna lie.
I think the thing that was interesting about this particular game was the fact that when we were watching New York play, they had 4 shots on target during the match, and some of those and 8 shots overall. 2 of them had been blocked. You know, their scoring opportunities weren't like exactly laughable. You know, they actually did have a couple of moments of good build up, a couple of moments that, you know, Lauro had to make sure he was on his game, organizationally, that, you know, Lasso had to make some good tackles to create some blocks in there. You know, it's interesting because it wasn't necessarily a game where it was like we dominated the other team. I mean, let's compare this match offensively as an opponent to some of our previous games, like even against like Charleston. I think New York at times felt more threatening than Charleston did in that particular matchup. You know, it's interesting because like you said, the scoreline really didn't match the intensity or play style of that particular game.
No, I mean, if you think back to some of the more recent games, like there had been more than one where Evan Lauro could be sitting down doing a crossword for most of the game. I can remember at least 3 or 4 times that Forrest Lasso laid out to make a block before it would have gotten to Lauro, and in some cases would have gotten past him because of the positioning on the play. Like, New York definitely had opportunities, and we saw the vaunted Tampa Bay team defense, because it wasn't just the goalkeeper diving and making stops. It was defenders getting in front of the ball, putting their bodies in front of the ball, stretching out to deflect the ball, fighting to win the ball back. Like there were good chances all around, and good play all around. Like New York definitely felt like they were a more threatening team at certain points on the night.
One of the things that's funny is on the Twitch pregame show, I think I had mentioned that one of my predictions for the match, besides just the scoreline, was that neither team would have very many passes, completed passes in that game. Because historically speaking, games against New York, because both teams like playing open, they like playing aggressive, and they like playing, you know, with speed in the attack, that, you know, you wouldn't see a lot of possession numbers in this game. Sure enough, neither team finished with 400 passes on the night. It's like, we were looking at the total pass count was only 354 for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. And New York was too short of 400. I will take that as a win. Thank you very much.
If you think about it, how many times we saw Rowdy's players just running straight up the pitch with the ball. Those numbers aren't really surprising.
And I mean, you think about it, it's like the Rowdies, I think on average on the season, the Rowdies, I think if I'm not mistaken, are somewhere around like 450 or something like that. Because like we've had a lot of games where we've hit nearly the 500 mark, if not more than 500. You know, at times when you're playing against, some of these teams that are willing to bunker against you, you know, the passes along the back line going from switching sides from one side to the other, you know, there's no pressure on doing that. So the completion percentage is like, you know, 89%, you know, so It's just interesting because it was one of the things that we had talked about. This is, let me throw an observation out there. New York, of course, being a development club, they are trying to get their players on this, on that USL roster in a position that they can seamlessly go into an MLS team. Specifically, wins and losses don't really matter to them. It's who on the roster can we get signed on to the Red Bulls that we think can make an impact? And that's what the whole purpose is. That's really what the purpose of that type of situation should be. So good on them for really sticking to it. As we mentioned, they had a couple players signed this weekend to join the Major League team. Goalkeeper AJ Marcucci and forward Omar So. What's interesting is about this match is there were three players that are technically MLS rostered players that were playing down with the Red Bulls too. Jeremy Raffinello. No, he was on the bench. Oh, wow, I'm having a mind fart. Hold on, give me a second. I put the wrong name out there.
He
it was sticking in my head.
Though, right? Raffinello got in and played, I think, in the second half.
He did. I was thinking Matthias Jorgensen. I don't know why my mind went to Raffinello right away. But Jorgensen, he's an MLS player. He's on their MLS roster. Cameron Harper is an MLS player. He was getting minutes with Red Bulls, too, because he was having a hard time breaking into the main roster with up there. But here's the notable thing. Lucas Monzon, center defender for New York Red Bulls 2, is a 19-year-old Argentinian player that had just been signed to the Red Bulls in the summer transfer window, like, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago. You know, this is a player that they're really high on for moving into the forward. Now, granted, big picture here, right? Red Bulls are having a bad year in MLS. They're in a process of rebuilding. So, you know, we're not talking about, like, players that are going to run the table type of deal with Red Bulls, and you know, you're wondering, why are they sending these players down to Red Bulls too? It's fine. They're totally in a rebuilding stage right now for the MLS team. Slightly unexpected, right? But that's an MLS conversation. Monzon did not have, for his first match, if I'm not mistaken, it's the first minutes he's had in the United States, did not have a particularly good 45 minutes. He was subbed out at halftime, but, you know, I it just goes to the point where, you know, this team that we were up against was no slouch on talent overall, but it also harkens to what we saw when Red Bulls 2 played against Hartford earlier this year, and they also had a roster and a starting 11 with a lot of MLS players on it. Because if you remember, that match against Hartford that ended 7-0 Hartford, I believe the number was 5 Major League Soccer players were on the roster that day, which is where a lot of the commentary was coming from, was like, was this really a game where the players just really didn't care, or did they just really get that thrashed? And then what happens, you know, there's 3 against the Rowdies and boom, we win 6-0. I don't know if it's really a talent thing. I don't know if it's just, you know, as much as they want to try and create two teams that play identical systems, you still have to have chemistry with the guys you're on the field with. Maybe that's part of it, you know, and maybe it's just affecting them more this year that, you know, for some reason. But the bottom line and the point I'm trying to make, they were no slouches on talent. There's a lot of good talent on that team and a lot of good talent that was on the field that we were up against. You know, and it really goes to point out just how dominant the Tampa Bay Rowdies are. But here's the other observation. Why do teams continuously try to play an open field against us?
Yeah.
I mean,
within the first 4 or 5 minutes of that match, you knew how it was going to go. You didn't know it was going to end 6-0, but you knew the Tampa Bay was going to have more than their needed amount of chances to get something done. And wow, they did. But yeah, going back to what you said, a couple things about the talent, like if you're watching that game, you got to feel pretty good about the future of the Tampa Bay Rowdies, knowing that two or three of those guys that started on the other side will be joining us at some point, because that's what always happens. And then I wanted to go back for a second. You mentioned going back to the pregame show. Also, as seen on Bay News 9, it's just so weird, that whole situation. I got to keep saying that. I tried to trick, I believe I was mostly just trying to trick Dan into to saying set piece orgy instead of one goal affair. if you saw the feature on us on Bay News 9, I noticed that they had a term. You know, I was trying to say that, you know, set piece orgy was the opposite of a one goal affair. Bay News 9 coined their own opposite. It was six goal outburst.
I mean,
I'm going to go with that. I like that. Six goal outburst. That was there was some outbursting going on.
We'll touch on the Bay News 9 stuff after here in a few minutes, but so when you've got a performance like this, and like I said, I mean, I'm with you. With 15 minutes into that game, it's 2-0 Tampa Bay Rowdies, and we had already missed a penalty kick. I mean, the writing was on the wall very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In a game like this, where you have three different players all scoring two goals apiece, who's your man of the match?
Oh, God. You know, Ekra got player of the week honors for two goals plus two assists. Watching that game, I remember thinking it was going to be hard to come up with one, pick one of these for tonight. I don't know what I want to call it, because I don't want to call it exactly man of the match, because I don't know if you can narrow it down and say there was just one standout performer, but I mentioned him a few minutes ago. And I'm the guy that loves goals. Like, you know, if it's a 1-0 game, and I'm apt to give it to the goal scorer because that's easy and cheap, and so am I. But I really loved Forrest Lasso back on defense. Some of the stops I saw him make, like getting in the way of shots, and putting his body on the line, like when he couldn't get to it with his feet, turning around and deflecting it with his back, deflecting it with whatever he could get onto the ball. The six goals are great, and I'm obviously thrilled about those. But without some of the work the defense did, and specifically I noticed Forrest Lasso, like that shutout streak ends. We're not here trying to make bad 7-11 jokes at this point without the work he did, because of the chances. And this is not to say anything about Evan Lauro, because Evan Lauro is great. Had, you know, one great stop when he needed to. I'm surprised you haven't referenced it yet, because it was from your guy, your favorite player, Mathias Jorgensen, had probably New York's best chance at goal, forcing Evan Lauro into a save late. But the defense really did step up and did their part. Like, you can tell, you know, they want to win, that, and they're going to tell you that winning the game is the most important part. But you can tell that this scoreless streak means something to them at this point. It's stretched on for this many games and this many minutes, and they don't want to let it end just yet. So the effort and the work put into that, I know that I'm calling it man of the match, but I was impressed as hell by what I saw out of him, which is saying a lot, because Forrest Lasso generally just impresses to begin with.
Jan Ekra's performance was incredible this weekend. He absolutely 100% deserves team of the week. even Fot Mob, as much as I absolutely hate their rating numbers because I just never agree with them, Jan Ekra earned a wild 9.6 out of 10 on Fot Mob. That number is virtually unheard of.
I'll take it. I'm not going to argue with it.
Let's throw this out there, though. Two other players on Fot Mob also earned higher than nines. 9.0 for Leo Fernandez and a 9.1 for Sebastian Gonzatti. Now,
okay,
it's FOT mob. So if a player scores a goal, they're automatically like a 6, and then it just kind of goes up from right. there. It is what it is. But those numbers are wild for FOT mob's rating system. But again, to our point, Evan Laurel earned an 8.2, which in a game like this, you don't usually see a number that high because
right.
traditionally it's just they're not really that involved. So again, it shows the point of how important Evan Laurel's role was in this game. I think for me, I'm going ahead and giving it to Sebastian Gonzatti. And the reason for that is he helps set the tone for that match. He scores first in that game. He had a couple of assists himself. Mm-hmm. And, as the team captain, he sets a tone. You know, he is the leader on the team who's setting the expectation. When he's involved early in a game, we said this a long time ago. If Sebastian Gonzatti is not like involved in this team, if he's not involved in the starting 11, if he's not involved in a game early, you're not going to get a positive result. He is critical to how this team runs.
Right.
So to see him getting involved as early as he did, and especially picking himself up after a good save off of one of his penalty kicks, to be able to fight through that and continue pushing, that's fantastic. And I think for me, that's why I would give him man of the match.
Yeah. I was going to say, thinking about Seba, the fact that, so we get the penalty shout early, it's pretty early on. And it's that's the first time that he's had one saved this year and has not converted a penalty in quite a while. Like there's a reason why the guy, and I had this kind of, weird feeling before he ran up and took that shot. I just kind of felt weird about it. And for him to, kind of brush it off and keep going and say, okay, I'm going to have several other chances anyway. Not going to get too upset about this one. Not going to get too down. I'm not going to beat myself up over it. Spirits were high on and off the pitch for the entire night. And a lot of it has to do with Seba's leadership.
And if I'm not sure if I misspoke about Gonzatti scoring first, I don't know why I was thinking that. Obviously I know Dahlgaard swung it into Fernandez for the first goal, but either way, picking yourself up after the penalty kick miss in general was the important thing there. And, it's just, it's a satisfying result. I think that's the thing that's most important about this is that, we let off, I think it was the final count was, I think we let off 11 smoke bombs in Ralph's mob this weekend, which, it's just kind of wild to me, that we've got the opportunity to be able to celebrate like that, because stuff like this never happens. Like that's a magical result, a magical weekend. And, it just makes you feel good about everything, especially when you look at where we are in the standings.
Yeah.
As we go into the standings here, any final thoughts about the game this weekend?
We always bring up during some of these one goal affairs how it was a great game for the casual observer or for the neutral observer. That's fine, but every now and then I like having one that's just great for the fans that are there in person. Something where you don't have to stress about it for the match, worry about a nil-nil game going the wrong way off a deflection or something like that, where you can just crush them early on and cruise to a win. That's fun as hell.
Fun it was, cruising it was, and that leads us into how well we are cruising at the top of the Atlantic Division table. Moving on to 16 wins, 6 losses on the year and a draw, your Tampa Bay Rowdies are in first place with 49 points overall, a plus 23 goal differential, which, may I point out, is second best in the league, only behind, Phoenix, because they play a bunch of scrubs.
Right.
Pittsburgh Riverhounds is still behind us, 2 games back, 2 points out, 14 wins on the year. They also had a win this weekend. They beat Loudoun 5-0, and I think I saw on Twitter somebody made a joke. Imagine how pissed off you would be about being a Pittsburgh Riverhound player going, we took care of business against the bottom team of the table, just to turn around and find out that Tampa Bay literally did it better.
Scored one more goal against technically a slightly better team. Well, that's the thing. Like, you can look at some of these other divisions, and there's several other, division leaders, some of these clubs with more than 40 points. But, Pittsburgh could be on top of, I think, almost every other division in the league. And here they are still looking up at us with still games in hand on them. It's kind of nuts what's going on in this division right now.
It's funny to think that even after those 2 games, that Red Bulls 2 and Loudoun still has a worse goal differential by 3 goals. Despite performing a goal better this weekend and 2 blowout losses, that's kind of funny to me.
Yeah. Or as Dan pointed out there at the match, I think New York's goal difference is a negative 25, and the Rowdies account for 8 of those 25 because we won by 2 goals the first 2 times and then piled 6 more on now. Like, a third of their negative goal difference has been courtesy of us.
In third place, Miami, equal on games played, but with an 8-point gap. Mind you, that's going to roughly equate to, I mean, what are we talking about here? That's at least a three-game advantage, essentially, if you're going to use baseball terms.
Yep. I like it.
Charlotte Independence, 22 games played, so they got a game in hand on us, but they are presently 15 points back at 34 points overall. Fighting them for that fourth spot in the playoffs, Hartford Athletic, 23 games played, 30 points overall. Charleston Battery, with only 21 games played, that's a very notable number because they're still within striking range of that fourth seed. They have 28 points on the year, 6 points behind Charlotte. Like I said, they've got the 2 games compared to us. They've only got they've got 2 games on Hartford, but only 1 game on Charlotte. So it's very close. They're still very much in it. Of course, New York and Loudoun round out the bottom too, but we all knew that.
Yes, they also exist.
They also exist, sort of. I mean, after a 6-0 and a 5-0 weekend, I mean, they barely exist at this point. You know,
it's especially in Loudoun's case, where they've now canceled or what. Was it a postpone or a forfeit? They've got a COVID outbreak, so they are not playing.
Well,
next match.
So yeah, let's talk about that for a second. So it's as it stands right now. The last report that I read is that at the moment it's just basically a postponing or a rescheduling.
Okay.
They haven't made the decision to actually cancel the games, but from what I understand, presently there are 11. I think the tweet that I read was 11 players, but I don't know if it's necessarily players or maybe I'm misremembering it and it's just 11 staff plus players or whatever the combination there is.
Right.
What was surprising to me, though, about the update that this person received from the league is that it was 11 players spread out amongst 5 different teams in USL.
Interesting.
I thought that was fascinating. Because I would really... we haven't... USL doesn't have a protocol for, you know, announcing player injuries, player, not suspensions, but like players that are going to be out, you know.
Right.
We know this from a media aspect because even the game day rosters and like right up until the game day roster, you have no idea who's going to be on the game day roster, typically speaking. You know, teams always play around with the graphics and the information that they're sharing between one team and another and between the media, you know, representatives of both clubs. They'll put a bunch of names on the roster and go, this is our expected lineup. And then the actual starting 11 looks literally nothing like it. So,
yeah.
You know, that's life in USL right now. You know, it's rare to find an organization that's willing and open to talk about their players, their injuries, how long they may be potentially out. I mean, shoot, we don't even find out how long most contracts are, let alone player injuries.
No.
But
and you know, there are some teams that will put that info out and they'll be kind of open and they'll say, you know, it's going to be this many weeks, it's this kind of injury, or they're having surgery or something. But to pull the curtains back a little bit, like, we generally get the lineups a little bit in advance so we can prepare for the pregame shows on those days.
You're making people think we prepare for that.
Pretending. Hey, there's some B-roll footage that Dan and I filmed pretending to prepare. Like this time, like we got the rosters, and New York just sent, like, here's a 23-man roster. It'll be some of these guys. And like literally, I think right before we went on is when we got their roster and was like, okay, so these, you know, these two guys that we, you know, read about being signed, like both of those, I think both of those guys that we talked about earlier that they had signed to the senior team, both of them were on the 23-man roster that we got a copy of. But neither of them actually traveled or were in the 18. So it was a little fun game there. I don't know if that's something that New York did just because it's Tampa Bay and they want to screw around a little bit or what the deal was.
Yeah. Well, as mentioned, this couple weeks ago, actually, I think it was two games ago, whatever it was, last home game, not this previous, but the one before, Kenny Morales stepped in and joined the Unused Subs pod for one of our Twitch pregame shows. I was not there. It happened to be a match that I skipped out of precaution for, you know, just COVID reasons. I wasn't sure if I was in close contact. Turns out I wasn't in close contact with anybody that had it. It was just we didn't have the test results back, so I didn't want to take the chance. No big deal. Right. I was fine. I tweeted that out. Everything was cool. We're all good. But
because despite the fact that it looks like we're in the locker room, we are not. We're in a very tiny room under the stadium with a big blue screen back there.
Yeah.
That I almost pulled down last week on accident.
But the good news was is I didn't need that spotlight. I've been on TV before. I don't give a crap.
You're in all the ads anyway.
Matt and Dan had the spotlight on a TV special that ran on Bay News 9 as a part of the Spectrum Sports segment, talking about what we do with the Twitch pregame show and basically kind of the evolution of that. Lee Cohen gave some words of encouragement and compliment to us and to Matt and Dan specifically. And both of you guys got to share a little bit about your backgrounds and how you kind of grew up into the fandom. And then by extension later doing the podcast and then of course doing the Twitch pregame, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. I thought you guys absolutely 100% deserved all the plaudits on this. This thing is the Twitch pregame show wouldn't be the Twitch pregame show if the Unused Substitutes didn't exist, and that's because of what you guys do and what you guys started and what you guys have been doing. I'm here to support you guys. Let's be real.
Someone has to know what they're talking about.
Look, I thoroughly loved that interview. I loved the piece that was done. Matt, what was the impact that you saw from that interview you know, friends and family reaching out, people over the interwebs reaching out to you and kind of, you know, sharing words of encouragement and things like that. Like, what has the last like 24 hours been like for you after having that go live? I mean, what has it been like for you?
It's been interesting. I posted the video to my my personal Facebook page, and I don't talk a lot about the podcast or haven't really mentioned the pregame show with the my Facebook kind of circle. A couple people there know about it, but it's not something that I've made kind of, you know, public out there. And the string of comments and kudos have been, I'm not going to lie. It's as someone who has never really done well with accepting praise and compliments, it's been very uncomfortable. But at the same time, I'm extremely, extremely grateful for all the things people have said. And they didn't just run it that one night. They apparently have rerun that segment several times because I had a coworker say she was at physical therapy on Tuesday morning, and the sound was off on the TV, but the TV was on, and she was like, "Hey, that looks just like me," and sent me a screenshot of it. I had a former student email me, one of my students from last year, saying, "Holy crap, I just saw you on the news." That she had turned the TV on when she got home and wasn't really paying attention, but then heard my voice and then said she dropped her phone and screamed, which is generally the effect I have on my students. I'm okay with it. But I've kind of always kept, like, you know, the soccer side and then everything else kind of separate. And this has been kind of the, to steal a Marvel phrase, like a nexus point, a fixed point in history where there's been this convergence. And yeah, it's, man. So I actually, Kenny got in touch with me probably about a month or so ago. Like, it was still during summertime. So this would have been like two months ago, maybe. And, he had talked to the team and said he wanted to do a little something. He heard about, you know, the pregame show and heard what was going on. He wanted to do something about that. So I drove up to Al Lang and talked with him and, one of his, cameramen for probably a half hour, 45 minutes or so. And then we did some footage walking up and down the field, and it smelled just like Red Tide. It was great to be out there. It was fantastic. And then between his schedule, he was out of town for a little bit, and then the Rowdies not having a home game for a while, he wasn't able to come in and do, he wanted to do this, like, some follow-up stuff, like, at the show itself. And, yeah, no, that the whole thing came out really good, and I generally hate the sound of my voice or seeing myself in pictures and video and stuff, and I was impressed. My daughter and I sat down. Again, I had no internet, and I don't have Spectrum to begin with, but I found a way you can watch it through their app. So we're sitting over the phone on Monday night watching it, because, like, Sunday evening, Kenny was like, "Hey, by the way, it's going on air tomorrow." Like, oh, God. Okay. All right. But, you know, and one of the things he talks about in there is how we've kind of, like, taught ourselves how to do all this stuff. And, like, watching it, I know how much stuff I filmed with him and how much stuff that Dan filmed with him. And, like, just the tiniest amount makes it in there because he's trying to put all this other information into it as well. I don't know that I could ever wrap my mind around thinking that expansively to be like, let's get a little bit of everything and cut it down to, like, the parts that we need. Like, there's so much other stuff that we did footage of, but, like, you know, the Rowdies have retweeted it. We've had some friends and family repost it and talk about it. One of our good friends used to work for one of the radio stations in the area. You may remember him on 102.5 Nervous Jared, the game that Dan and I were the social Rowdies for. He was out there for that game too, or one of the games. We met up with him and have kind of been friends with him. And now he's off in Texas. His dad died in the last year. He had a kidney transplant, got married. I think he had COVID at some point. And has always been someone that I've really respected because I see how hard he's worked at all this stuff. And he retweeted it to, like, his 12, 13,000 followers. And, you know, threw some kind words in there. It's all been kind of overwhelming. And, like, when I'm in my classroom trying to teach my class and I'm sneaking a peek at my phone here and there, and it's just, you know, nonstop compliments, it's kind of made it hard to maintain my composure a little bit because, and you know, been dealing with some of the stuff I've been dealing with in my my personal life, that to have that kind of feedback coming my way has been very very needed, and I immensely appreciate it. I can't say enough how much I appreciate it, and I appreciate the people, because the pregame show might not exist without us being around and doing this thing, but we don't exist without people listening to it and you know, buying scarves and you know, sending us secret info in DMs, and you know, it's we've been able to do this because there have been people that wanted us to do this, which is has been nice. And like, our goal has always been to try and get more eyes and more attention on the club itself. That's why we started, because there wasn't any. It was never about like, you know, let's get ourselves famous, but you know, it was like, you know, like when Jake gets hired by the club in the off season, that was, that's kind of been our goal, was like, let's help other people, like let's do cool stuff with our friends and help other people, you know, go places. And like, that was kind of our, like a dream come true for Dan and I, and that now to have turned around and kind of put us in the center of it, it's crazy, man. It's just crazy, but I love it.
Well, like I said, you guys totally deserve the spotlight, all the work you guys have put in to do this. I mean, it may only be one night a week that we're on air, but you know, obviously we spend time. I know on occasion it doesn't seem like it, but there are times where we put in a lot of hours of research to making sure that this thing is running smoothly and is, you know, run to the ability that we can make it, right? You know, it's
right.
We don't have staff's worth of paid salary folks doing all this that are professionally trained and educated, you know, stuff like that. It's, you know, we're doing the best we can, right? But you know, it's cool to see that get paid off and to start to get some recognition from folks, even on some of the newer outlets that we're trying right now, especially with Twitch, right? You know. So it's been fun. It's been cool. I'm super, super happy for the two of you that you guys had a chance to participate in that. And like I said, I'm happy I wasn't there, if I'm being honest, because that would have meant less time for you two. And that's not fair. You know, it's not when you guys founded the whole operation. So my name got shouted out. I'm happy. That's all I needed. We're good. He acknowledged I exist. So we're cool.
Yeah, it was it's been interesting. One of my coworkers was talking to me about it today, and then some of my bosses were there, and they were like, "Oh, what are you talking about?" Like, "Well, okay. I guess I might as well tell you, since I had to send them a picture of me like in my classroom and they shouted out my school on air, like, "Oh, by the way." Okay, but that's fine. I've seen my boss at games before, or more specifically at tailgates. There's nothing nothing like running into your boss at a tailgate while you're chugging a beer to just get the weekend going right.
It's awesome.
Except the next week later when I saw one of my students right. As I was chugging a beer. Like, well, there's a theme here.
There's always that.
There's always that.
Well, this upcoming weekend, Rowdies are playing Atlanta 2. Atlanta United 2 are in the middle of a playoff fight in the Central Division. Of course, it's a garbage division, so that's not too terrible to understand. But they are presently in fifth place with a 29-point. Mind you, pretty sure I'm not looking at a live table myself here, so if they end up pulling out a win tonight against Charleston, they will officially be in a playoff spot potentially by the end of the night.
If you're looking at the USL site, that's a live table. They don't promote that, but it is.
Yeah, it's very confusing because they don't make it obvious for you. Good times.
Yeah, there's no like disclaimer or anything, but right. Yeah, that is 100% a live table.
Well, either way, we're looking at either like 6 or 7 wins on the year. They've lost 9. They have 8 draws at the moment, plus 1 goal differential. They are only at most 1 point behind OKC, Energy FC, who also has a losing record presently in a playoff spot. That's how bad Central Division is. There's presently an 8-point gap between 3rd and 4th in the Central. Louisville, Birmingham, and Tulsa are the teams that are with double-digit wins out there. On the backside, all the way down to 7th place is still within striking distance. For that matter, technically, Sporting KC 2 isn't really out of it yet, technically. But Memphis is in 7th in that division with 25. Indy is presently in 6th with 29 points as well. So that is a very... They're just as much in a tight race as we are. Well, not we are, but in our division for that 4th playoff seed. It's 4 teams all within 5 points of each other in the Central. So they are... The guys that are full-time rostered, Atlanta 2 players... are absolutely trying their hearts out right now to try and get into the playoffs. So there's no freebies against them, undoubtedly. Like I said, they're kind of they're playing a bit spirited tonight. On the flip side, they are playing tonight, which makes a big difference for the upcoming game this weekend. You know, they've got wins recently against Indy 11, a team they're in a battle with the playoffs with. It was a 1-0 result. They beat Sporting KC 2-4-1 a few weeks ago. They've got a draw against OKC Energy. Those are all games against playoff opponents. That's all important results. But on the flip side, Pittsburgh destroyed them 4-1 a few weeks ago. FC Tulsa handled them 3-1, second to last game out. You know, so they've got some results that where they lose big. But they have 7 wins, at least 7 wins on the year. You know, they are 6 wins on the year. So, you know, they've been able to keep themselves in games. They've been able to fight. Don't expect a pushover. We have played some very interesting games in the past in Atlanta. If you remember some of the crazier goals we've seen, like Juan Tejada had a magnificent goal against Atlanta last year. You know, it's always been, Kennesaw State's always been a weird place to play for us. We've had some just bizarre results, mostly because they basically have always played in an empty stadium, so it's just always felt really eerie because there's just nobody there. It's a lot like playing in Charlotte, but unintentionally without fans compared to intentionally. It's a little weird. But, you know, it's just got a weird vibe to it. Always has.
Right.
You know, they play on a mixed grass synthetic type surface. It's not pure grass, it's not pure turf technically speaking. You know, it's an interesting scenario. I expect the Rowdies to win. I mean, straight
forward. My advice would be for the Rowdies to simply go and score. If I was them, I would try and score more goals in Atlanta. That would be my my tactics for the night.
That's your brilliant tactical analysis, sir.
Yep. If I were the Rowdies, if I was Neil Collins, I would say, all right, boys. Hold on, wait. I'm going to channel my inner Greg Berhalter.
Oh, man.
Hostile crowd. Maybe. This is fight or flight time, boys. And you know what? We're fighting. Are you ready to fight? Let's go.
I think Neil Collins is gonna walk up to the team. He's gonna be carrying 2 soccer balls in his hand, and he's gonna walk up and he's gonna be like, "Boys, you know what happens when you go to Atlanta? Follow
cousin.
Follow curfew.
And their cousin has a friend and, who is about to get married,
and don't meet up with that person, please." Yeah.
I gotta tell you, I won't go into that whole story because it's very all over the internet right now.
Oh,
I'll
yeah, no,
say,
no.
After reading it, I was like, man, maybe I didn't get quite the effective vaccine because I didn't have that happen. Oh, and with that, I have now hit the 15% power, and it's going to power-saving mode, which I think might shut me off of here in just a second.
Well, as far as Tampa Bay Rowdies are concerned, the good news is that we should be in a position to play pretty much a almost a full roster at this point. The only player that's really significantly out is Luis Fernando, who we haven't seen at all this year to begin with.
But he does exist.
He does exist. He just hasn't played. He hasn't made a game day roster. It is what it is. That's going to be the encouragement. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we see a roster, like our game day roster, is the same as it was last weekend. It wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
Because we're in a little stretch right now where, like, that was the last Saturday home game, but these next 3 weeks are all Saturday games, even though they're on the road. Like, this is I think this is the only, or tied for the only, like, four games in a row on weekends, or you don't have like a Monday or a Tuesday thrown in.
Yeah, September.
Got a chance to get some guys rested, and you can see some interesting lineups.
September is our cool month, if you want to call it, because October is absolutely jam-packed. Again, you know, we've got two, think about it this way, we've got two games in hand over Pittsburgh, and we've got a very easy September schedule. That kind of gives you an idea of the setup that you're looking at when we go into October, is we basically have to play like twice a week to end the year in the last month of the season. Like, it's insane going into playoffs. So, you know, it's going to be important to, like,
we're going to play a lot of soccer in October. I'm just going to throw this out there. Socktober.
I don't
know. Socktoberfest. Yes. October is Socktoberfest.
Oh, man. I'm going to give that to you.
There's an episode title.
I'm going to give it to you.
There's an episode title.
I'm not even going to fight it. Not even going to fight it. Like I said, I think
this is why I'm on Bay News 9.
Oh, man. I'll say this.
But it's a headset, and I don't want to throw it on the ground.
I'm confident this weekend will probably be the same lineup that we saw this past weekend, trying to churn out results, trying to make sure we're maintaining that gap over Pittsburgh. Score predictions. What do you think how do you think we handle Atlanta this weekend?
So we just blew New York out of the water by a score of 6-0. Make sure I throw that nil in there, because I know Ryan Sudol loves references to nil. We're at 711 minutes without conceding a goal. On the road. You know, I really got to go to one of these games. I got a lot of family and friends in the Kennesaw area. I'm just going to put that out there. I need to go to one of those games. Yes, this is me just kind of killing time while I figure out what I'm going to say. Actually, I know what I'm going to say. I'm not just not sure how I'm going to say it. So to hell with it. 2-0 to the Rowdies.
You stole the words right out of my mouth. That's the prediction I'm going with as well. 2-0 to the Rowdies. Atlanta's going to fight tooth and nail, but I don't think they have what it takes to overcome to get a win, certainly. I think it'll be a tougher game than New York. I think New York got a little bit lucky with some of those goals. I mean, Leo hitting one off the face of the goalkeeper is LOL.
Did you see the XG for the match? Like, without going into a ton, like, the XG for the Rowdies was like 2.96, and they ended up with 6 goals.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things going right that maybe you didn't expect when the shot was taken that worked out. So,
yeah.
The bounces went our way.
Yeah.
That may have been what they were always referred to when they say it always evens out. Okay, it may have taken 10 years, but in one game, it all evened out.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts here before I start the outro? I know your phone is dying, but you had any other comments or questions you want to throw out there?
No. Thank you again to everybody. I think we're going to be unanimous. Our We Love You goes to Dan.
Yes.
And his companions at home. Dear God, I hope the internet is, like, I haven't even called Frontier yet, just because I know by the time I get to that point, that's the last resort. If I can't fix it myself, I know it's going to be in about another week before they get everything fixed. at least if last time was any indication. No. Again, thank you to absolutely everyone in the past, in the present, in the future. It's just been a hell of a week, and I appreciate it more than I can probably adequately say.
100%. Dan, we love you. Make it through the week, my friend. It's going to be a hard one. It's going to be a hard week next week, too. Our thoughts are always with you. Casey as well, because obviously this impacts her just as much as it impacts you. And, of course, the distance with you guys, that only makes this whole lot harder. So, absolutely.
I know she's here.
No, I understand that. But, like, in general,
know,
she wasn't here like 3 days ago. You know, it's like when Dan's finding out all about this stuff, you know, he's carrying the initial burden himself there at home. So, you know, Dan, we definitely appreciate you, and we hope to see you. I mean, we're not going to probably see you for several weeks, just because the Rowdies are on the road for a bit, but, yeah, I mean, we'll certainly, be on socials with you, bud. So, keep us up to date on what's going on. We also want to thank Wolfface for providing the great intro music track that we have, Radio St. Pete for giving this wonderful platform to do a live show on and assault your ears, Shamrock Pub for giving us that amazing bunker secret location for live shows. If you are listening, please share, subscribe, give us a rating, a review. It helps all the algorithms. It helps get us out there in front of the rest of the Rowdies Kingdom. That way everybody can find out a little bit of behind the scenes, a little bit of some thoughts about the Rowdies, and get some real Rowdies talk on a pretty weekly basis. If you want to take your support to the next level, Patreon is the number one crazy way to support us without a question. Easy as $1 a month can go a long way. Lots of things we're trying to do, lots of things we might need to invest in. So all that stuff really can help. Upwards of $10 a month, where you can become an executive Patreon producer, just like you had with tonight's show with Ryan Blank. Again, thank you, Ryan, for your contributions and support. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old cookie cutter template old uniforms you constantly see from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for a unique, completely custom kit for, say, a youth club, Sunday league squad, maybe it's an adult team you play on, or even a pro team you're thinking about working for one day, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Matt, another show is come and gone. Rowdies are on the road. The boys better get it done. That's all I got to say.
Heck yes.
Everybody have a great rest of your night, and go Rowdies. The Rowdies are near, the Rowdies are near.